get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have Pete McPherson. You may know Pete from his podcast, Do You Even Blog? That's been around for many years and been part of the blogging and niche website space. But this podcast is one of the more real podcasts you'll get in terms of what struggles bloggers and niche website creators may go through. And he mentions the recent decline of his Do You Even Blog brand in terms of his revenue and launches and sales, and kind of dives into a little bit of why that may have been the case and kind of how he's pivoted into some different niche sites. And we dive deep into the YouTube game. So he's big on YouTube. He has YouTube adjacent to his niche websites, which he finds very enjoyable and very profitable in that area too. So we dive into all the different things around creating good videos, good product reviews for your YouTube. And then same thing with his processes. He's a time and organizational freak, and he's managed to create systems that make things very efficient. He kind of runs through those too. So sit back and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show, and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
All right. Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have Pete McPherson. Welcome, Pete.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me on.
No, thank you for coming on. I've actually listened to you for a while on your Do You Even Blog podcast. So it's great to actually be able to chat to you in person. I think, when did I first run into you? It might have been a few years ago now when I was back home in New Zealand and things like that. So you always have some good stuff on there and some good content. But maybe for the listeners, do you want to introduce yourself a bit there and maybe what you do and other, I guess, ways you make money online now?
Yeah. So you mentioned the main one, Do You Even Blog, is the name of my quote-unquote media company. That's actually just last week I was at a conference and somebody suggested, oh, you should tell people you just run a media company. I was like, oh, it actually sounds kind of nice. I'm still trying that out. But it's actually kind of the truth. So I operate, at this point, a few different websites, a few different YouTube channels, actually technically a few different podcasts as well, although they're not like ongoing things. But yeah, doevenblog.com was started on accident about 6 years ago, I believe. I've been doing content creation for about 12 years, 13 years, actually, at this point. Long time. Do Even Blog was the first one that was making enough money fast enough where I was able to kind of make it my main thing.
Yeah.
If you guys know what I mean. You guys know what I'm talking about. And I've been doing that for, like I said, almost 6 years. So
as a podcast, or that start as a website?
Would you like the very short version of the story?
Sure.
Okay. I can give you a 20-minute version as well, but maybe I'll spare everybody that. So I was an accountant. I was a CPA in Atlanta. I worked for a big company and pretty much living the American dream, quote unquote, making decent money. They're giving me lots of raises every year. I have a wife. She was pregnant with our second child. And I pretty much hated this, right? Commuting for hours every single day and a really It was a great job. It paid me a lot of money, but it was boring and really not impactful at all. Super lame. So I wanted out. And in my spare time, I'm starting side hustles and blogs and online businesses and all this sort of stuff, most of which was complete failures. So in 2016, I decided I had enough. I convinced my wife to let me do this. And so I decided to take a job with a startup that was going to pay me less than I was making in accounting, but I only had to work like 20 hours a week. Like it was half time, but I was still going to get health benefits and a salary and stuff like that. It was like the best of both worlds, right? I could work part-time there, earn enough money, and then use the other time to start a fill-in-the-blank side hustle, right? So I quit my accounting career, excuse me. We move across the state. My wife also stops her work, and I went to work at the startup. It was going great for a while, but they only paid me one paycheck, and then I got laid off. So sad face. Yeah. I'm living in my grandmother's house. She's not there. She's in a retirement home. But like no work for my wife or I, no jobs, no income coming in whatsoever. We had to like figure out what to do. And I didn't want to go back to accounting, of course. So I immediately called up three friends of mine in the personal finance space. I haven't touched personal finance as a blog or anything for like 7 years, but I knew some people. And they're all making like multiple six figures a year, by the way. Like I reached out to them and I was like, please just let me ask you what to do. Like, tell me how to make money on the internet. Cause I've sucked at this so far. Please just help me. Right. And they agreed. It was over Skype. They also let me record them. And I got done with three of these and it hits me like, oh, this is actually a podcast. And this is actually what I enjoy doing most. Like I would love to start a niche site or some other thing on a specific topic, but the topic I care most about is actually digital marketing. Like that's what I'm into, the meta stuff, right? Blogging about blogging. I want a podcast about blogging. So I interviewed these three people and that was it right there. I called it Do You Even Blog? Just, I don't even know where the name came from. I just called it that. And lo and behold, it didn't take off by any stretch of the imagination, but it started getting noticed and it started working and I had my back against the wall. I didn't want to go back to accounting. So I made it work and that was it. There was a blog attached to it, of course. In late 2019, I started a YouTube channel to accompany it and just been going ever since. 6 years on. I feel old.
That's a cool story. That's a cool story to be able to make it. And doing it almost unconventionally by starting with a podcast versus starting with a website. What do you put down the success of the podcast to? Because obviously podcasts, you don't just search and podcasts come up and you're able to easily find them. Was there something that helped you, I guess, grow an audience?
No, not really. I'm going to be frank with you. The only thing I can really think of, well, there's actually maybe two or three things. Competitive advantages, if you will. Mm. Number one, I was really good at outreach. I haven't done this in years at this point, but at the time, in the first like month of the podcast, I was landing bigger guests.
Yeah.
I can't remember half of them. Like I emailed Neil Patel and I didn't actually know Neil Patel at all. I just heard the name in digital marketing and SEO circles. No clue like who the dude was really, but I reached out and I got him on the podcast and it went terrible, by the way, but that's a story for another day. But just like a number of people like that, Glenn Alsop in the SEO world who hadn't done a podcast interview in years and years and years, until like Pat Flynn's early Smart Passive Income podcast, like a decade ago. And just some other people came on that were really unusual podcast guests for a show the size of mine. Right. And so people honestly looked at this and they're like, hashtag authority. Like, oh, that guy's having Glenn Alsop and Neil Patel and like Michelle Schroeder Gardner and like all these people on his show. That must be, you know, legit. He's authoritative, right? No, of course not. But that was number one. And number two, I pretty much stole somebody else's podcasting format, which wasn't being done in the digital marketing space. I mean, the digital marketing topic. And I'll just tell you what I did. So I was listening to the Tim Ferriss podcast, which if anybody listens to it, you know, his interviews are like a couple of hours long.
Yeah.
Usually like an hour and a half or 2 hours, sometimes 3 hours or whatever. And I liked that. I really liked long form as a format. And nobody else was doing this. So I stole his format and just brought it over to like the blogging world where I got to talk with creators and bloggers and stuff. And it was, quote unquote, unique. Nobody was really doing that as much in this niche, if you will. And other than that, I just really enjoyed it. And I think that showed through. I think people could tell, especially in audio and video, whether you know what you're talking about or not, or whether you enjoy it, or if there's passion there.
Yeah.
And so I think that helped me that stand apart.
Nice. So how did you end up monetizing the podcast then? Because obviously at some point you need to make money, and it's not like YouTube when you can throw YouTube ads on. It's not like a blog where you can throw display ads. I guess you can have affiliate stuff on there, but is there a way that you decided to monetize it and went down that road?
Yeah, I didn't. No. And I still don't. No, I think podcast monetization is just a complete waste of time for 90% of people. I feel like if you're getting 20, 30, 50,000 plus downloads an episode, or not an episode, sorry, or like a month, like 20, 30, 50,000 downloads a month, you're just now hitting that barrier of sponsors that make it worth your while. Before that, I feel like you can get sponsorships, but it's not going to be a ton of money.
Yeah.
And it might be a little difficult. It's probably not worth your time. For me personally, I knew right off the bat, like, I got to provide for my family. Like, and the little occasional, like, $500 sponsorship, I ain't going to cut it, right? This is not going to work.
Yeah.
And so, digital products, right? I never served ads on my site. I serve ads on my niche site, but neither here nor there.
Yeah.
No. Well, I mean, there was affiliate marketing revenue, of course, eventually, but like right when I first started, that was very low as well. But digital products, eventually a membership, some paid workshops, paid webinar, I mean, just anything. I tried everything under the sun in the first like 6 months to figure out like what is going to make me enough money to be able to keep doing this.
Oh, but we're actually down the same road then, got the same kind of setup there with no, I guess, display ads on our main websites and monetizing through digital products and things like that too. But you mentioned you also have a niche or a niche site there, and that one is monetized differently. Does that one have your name behind it, or is that kind of like something on the side that you're dissociating yourself from but you're building?
Yeah. I'll give you the other quick story. So I've known what quote-unquote niche sites are for a decade, right? A long, long, long time. And I've started over like 55 plus websites, but most of that was before Do You Even Blog. And again, they were failures. It was the whole thing where I did it really hardcore for like 4 months. And I'm like, why isn't this making me $1 million? And then I quit. Right. We all know those people, like the beginners. Yeah. That was totally me for like a lot of different websites. So niche sites, authority sites, whatever you want to call them, content sites, they entered the picture for me personally about a year ago. Actually, it was like exactly a year ago, mid-September 2021. And the short version of the story is I got really burnt out / depressed on Do You Even Blog? What was my main business? It's been a steady like decline, I don't mind sharing, like in revenue numbers for like 2 years. Like 2020 was like a great year, and I made the most money I'd ever made, and I had like some funnels going and digital products and everything. It worked really well. And then all throughout 2021, it was like decline. I would like launch products, like new products, nothing. I would relaunch old products. Well, those, nothing. Like, I was just not making that much money and not growing. My email list was getting like a couple of hundred new subscribers a month, and then a couple of hundred unsubscribes a month. And it's just like remained the same number for like 16 months, right? So in September, I was like hitting this breaking point. Like, I think I'm done. Like something's got to change. That's pretty clear to me. I either need to go get a job. I need to double down on Do You Have a Blog, which sounded miserable because nothing was working and I was so frustrated with it. Or I need to start doing other projects, entrepreneurial projects or whatever. And so I chose to start another content site and YouTube channel. So I have a niche site and it has an accompanying YouTube channel. And now I have a couple of sites, but this was like the main one. I was like, I just got to do this for a couple of months to re-energize, to see if I'm even worth my weight. Like, I've been talking about blogging and all this stuff for like 5 years already, but my own business is failing. Like, am I any good at this? Do I know what I'm talking about? Turns out I do, because the niche site's been going really well and the niche YouTube channel is going really well. And it has nothing to do with digital marketing. Like, it's a completely separate niche. And that makes me really happy. And it did re-energize me. It did prove that, hey, at least I know somewhat of what I'm doing. I'm not like the world's best expert, but I'm not a total failure. Like, I know what I'm talking about and I can make this work to make money. And I don't remember your original question. I told you the backstory of like how I started the niche sites, but what was your original question?
Well, I think it was about the niche sites as well, but I'm going to come back to that because I want to first move towards your Do You Even Blog. I love the realism there, and I'm sure a lot of people listening to this might be going through similar problems, maybe with their site, maybe declining or stagnation in their sites, and maybe revenue dropping, and then being like, shit, what the hell do I do? What do you put that down to on the site? Was traffic maybe to the site declining as well, or was there maybe just not as much new content going up on the site or anything like that?
There's this good book by Malcolm Gladwell. I don't even remember which Malcolm Gladwell book it was, but in the book, he talks about airline crashes, like big airliners. And one of the points he kind of gets at is it is almost never one big error or malfunction or something that causes an airline to crash. And rather, it's like an average. If you look at the average airline crash, it's like an average of like 9 things that went wrong. Well, this one tiny thing went wrong, and this other tiny thing went wrong, and the pilot made this one error and this other stuff, and those are what makes like airplanes crash, yeah. Right? Really rare. That was Do Even Blog. So it's a number of things. That was a really long metaphor. I don't know if I landed it. Doesn't matter. That, you see what I did? Landed that one? Never mind. So first and foremost, my audience changed. Like the pandemic happened. Right. And at the start of the pandemic was like work from home. The majority of the human race knows what the word webinar means now, or the year before they didn't. Like, just learning about online work, online business, even like side hustles. Everything saw a boom in early 2020. And then that went away. And with that came a little bit of a, not recession, but people watching their money like a little bit closer, gas prices rising here and there, and just all sorts of this stuff. Less frivolous spending. For a lot of people, not everybody, but a lot of people. And so I think that was part of it. Another part of it is I've never had one avatar for Do Even Blog. I don't talk about podcasting. I don't talk about blogging. I don't talk about YouTube. I don't talk about funnels. I don't talk about YouTube. I talk about all of it. And so if you go and look at my email list, there's a ton of people on there that came from podcasting something. Because they saw me on YouTube and it was podcasting related. And then they opted in for a podcasting freebie and joined my email list. And now I'm launching SEO products or a digital funnel or a sales funnel program or whatever it is, right? I don't have a focused avatar, and I never have. I've always been lacking in that area. And the last thing would be the pilot error in our little situation here. I just kept getting burnout. I wasn't like, oh, I worked really hard, everything was going great, and then I hit a wall one day. No, it was like small defeat after small defeat after small defeat. And we can only persist for like so long.
Yeah.
Right? You hear this all the time. Like, entrepreneurs, failure is good. It teaches you stuff. You got to persist, grit, all these words. And I think they're right. All the business books, right? They talk about grit. But good Lord, at some point you have to quit and find something that works. Like, don't quit hitting the dead horse.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a good metaphor or not, but I just got burnt out over and over again. And you could tell my passion wasn't there. You could tell the energy wasn't there. And I think that contributed to it as well.
Do you plan on coming back to revive it after you get the re-energization from your other niche sites?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm leaving that open. It's such a personal brand. I don't think I could like sell it easily. I would have to do some, you know, reconfiguring and remove my name more than like probably hire some writers to like get SEO going again, because I haven't done that in like 3 years, and I don't want to do that. And so I think I'm just going to keep it on the back burner. I still do like a little roundup email every now and then. I still have like a membership for creators that still has people on it. We hang out and it's great. So the answer is, I don't know. I'll just play it by ear.
Nah, that's an awesome, I guess, insight into someone who's been in the game for a long time and kind of seeing, you know, not everything goes right all the time. And sometimes a pivot might be something that needs to be on the cards there. So I actually wanted to come to your pivot of moving towards a niche site and then your adjacent YouTube channel as well. So obviously, most advice when people are starting a new site or a new project is, okay, either pick YouTube or blogging. And you've obviously done, I assume, both adjacent or side by side there. So you maybe want to dive into maybe your processes of kind of what your plan was in the beginning to how to launch this.
Yeah. Again, that wasn't really a plan from the beginning. I'm going to be honest with you. I started the YouTube channel for this niche site before I decided, like, I'm going to put energy here. I kind of just did it one video, like, every couple of weeks for about 2 months. Just a couple of videos just to get my feet wet. And I won't spoil the niche. Technically, some people know about it, but it's not, like, public. But it's based on a hobby that I have, mm-hmm. and a bunch of people have. And so this was just a fun way for me to take my mind off things. I'm going to make these videos about a hobby I'm already interested in, and then we'll see what happens. So not a big plan. But there was one other thing. I don't think a lot of people think about this, which is interesting. A lot of people want to make money, affiliate marketing, ads from their niche site. Great. There's another benefit, especially with a YouTube channel, and that is free stuff. I'm just being really honest with you here. I started the YouTube channel with this in my head. This is already a hobby. I spend probably too much money on it. What if I could get this stuff for free? And lo and behold, I'll spoil it for you. It's so much easier than I ever imagined, right? People send me free stuff. And I reach out to brands and I'm like, hey, send me free stuff. I have a YouTube channel. And they're like, please. Yes. Review our stuff, right? It's based on products. They're like, we'll send you some products for free. And I'm like, this is awesome, right? No, it's not making like 7 figures a year. But quite frankly, like, this is money I would spend anyways. And yeah. So I'm getting it for free. So that's the entire reason I started the YouTube channel. Now, before we move on, I actually want to mention this idea that Google, SEO, niche sites, can play nicely with videos. I personally believe that it can help a niche site to have YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. It can. That's really, really vague wording. But here's a test. Here's a to-do list item. For anybody who has a niche site or wants a niche site and is also thinking about video, go to Google and start typing in your keywords, stuff you're already ranking for, stuff that's on your to-do list, like, I got to produce these articles or whatever, and just look at the video that's in search results. A lot of people will tell you, like, yeah, YouTube is the second largest search engine in the world behind Google, and they're owned by Google, so there's, like, some carry over here. I think that's less and less the case. I think YouTubers will tell you, like, don't focus on search. Focus on click-through rates and watch time and telling a story and all this other stuff. And I think that's actually the case for 99% of YouTubers. But video is showing up in search results more and more.
Yeah.
This is kind of just my opinion. There is some data, I think. But I know in my niche specifically, not all niches, but in my niche, video is, like, really starting to take over. You go to Google and type in searches, you'll see a lot of videos. And for me, that was like, well, I can't have the niche site. There's some feature snippets. There's some text space. There's some articles showing up too for these other keywords. But there's a lot of video content. So I was like, maybe this is a good fit for several different reasons. And so quite frankly, this year has been an entire experiment. I don't have, like, a lot of data to show that the YouTube helps the blog or the blog helps the YouTube channel. But I can tell you that both of them have been working really well. And I embed a lot of videos in my blog post. I was trying to think of other, like, concrete examples. Oh, one more thing I'll say, and then I'll shut up for a while, James. I'm just bragging at this point. I'm also really good at creating content. Or, if not really good, I'm really fast. I'm probably the fastest content creator you've ever met or had on your podcast. And part of it is because I've written 3,000 blog posts. I produce thousands of videos, a couple of hundred podcast episodes. Like, I just know what I'm doing. I've been doing this for 13 years at this point. And I can do things very, very quickly. So this idea of, like, oh, I would want to write 2 articles a week and a YouTube video a week as a side project, in addition to Do Even Blog, That doesn't actually scare me, and I'm actually able to do that and have it still be somewhat quality, right? You know, there's always a sacrifice there, but I think that's one of the competitive advantages I've had, and it's also one of the reasons why I can't necessarily really recommend everybody do this. Like, everybody needs to have a YouTube channel for their niche site. I don't actually think that's true at all. So I didn't actually give you any concrete answers
there, but no, that was that's that was good. But because obviously you mentioned that you do a lot of product reviews on your YouTube channel because you get sent free stuff. I get some free stuff too, just from my blog, and it's damn epic to be able to get free stuff to be able to just test out, review, and just have. But I guess for the YouTube video itself, how are you structuring the YouTube video? Because you mentioned obviously telling a story, things like that. It's gonna be engaging as well. You can't just stand there and kind of just be like, I don't know, boring, kind of going through the product. You probably need to have some kind of engaging content within the review. So how are you structuring those?
Yeah. There's two things I'll say about this. Three things. Number one, the typical advice for new YouTubers that you'll hear a lot, and I personally agree with, which is get to the point as fast as humanly possible. If you're Casey Neistat or Peter McKinnon or Mr. Beast, not Mr. Beast, that's actually a bad example. You could tell a story, and you can have cinematography, and you can do drone footage and all this other stuff. But if you're a new YouTuber, unless you're like really good, like top 1% in the world good, that's like, you're never going to grow. You're just not. Like, people are just going to leave the video. They don't know you. They don't follow you for a brand. They're just going to leave. And I personally agree with this. So number one, I get to the point as fast as humanly possible. If it's a specific product, I show the product, the actual product that we're reviewing, as fast as humanly possible. I just want to affirm for people, you clicked on this video, excuse me, you are in the right place. In today's video, we're going to talk about James and his new fill-in-the-blank site. I'm going to show you X and Y and Z, and by the time we're done, you will have learned A, B, and C. Let's go. Mm-hmm. Content, right? Just like straight to the point. That's number one. Gotcha. Number two, after that 10 seconds or whatever, this is just me. This is just my opinion. No one will tell anybody to do this. I like fewer edits. Anti-Mr. Beast. Mm. You go look at Mr. Beast's edits, and they're like seven a second. Like, it's just super fast. And I think there's merit for that. But for me personally, I was watching, I was analyzing the YouTubers that I follow and that I like. Like, where do I spend the most time on YouTube? Not like when I'm searching for something and I gotta learn how to like fix my doorknob. Not those videos, but like the people I follow and I just put on while I eat lunch. And if it's like a 15-minute video, I'll watch like the entire video. I was like, what are those people doing? And I found something that they all had in common. There were fewer edits, but they were all very watchable. And here's what I mean by that. They spent a lot of time in front of the camera before. They were all well-spoken. They were all clear, but they weren't afraid to take like little tangents or get slightly off topic or tell a joke or be funny or witty or something. They were just very watchable. And I think that was the one thing that I took to my videos. SEO for search, or, you know, telling a story or a product review, it doesn't matter. I'm not the best at this, but I really keep this in my head in every video I record. Like, I just need to be myself and try and be watchable. And again, there's a lot of adjectives that fall under that. Clear, funny, not too serious, honest. Like, there's a bunch of things that make that happen. But that's like the opposite of like super fast cuts. I'm going to follow a script. I'm going to say this one sentence, and then it's immediately going to cut to the next sentence, and et cetera, et cetera. And I don't subscribe to that. I really try and flow natural conversation, almost as if I were doing it live. And there was a third point, but I forgot what it was.
Oh, well, it might come up while we talk about the next point. But then obviously you translate that onto your website as a blog post. So I'm assuming you do the video first, then the blog post comes second?
They're completely separate entities. They're completely separate entities.
Okay.
And for a couple of reasons. Number one, the articles I have on my site don't really show videos and search results as much. If I'm Googling a query and I'm like analyzing search results and I see videos up top in Google SERP, I'm like, I'm not going to do an article for that. I'm just not. Like, why would I ever do that? I have a YouTube channel. I'm going to do a video. And or vice versa, right? If I'm like searching for something, a potential YouTube topic, I'll look at YouTube results as well, but I'll also like check Google. And if Google's like featured snippet heavy or like lots of articles of text-based stuff, I'm like, maybe I'll do a YouTube video of this. But that's actually first and foremost an article. So for me, they are very, very different. Very, very different. I still get most of my views from search, both Google and YouTube search. So there's not a whole lot of like video recommendations and homepage and sidebar feeds and what. It's still mostly geared towards search, but I analyze every single topic, every video idea separately, and then I kind of decide like, what am I going to do here? Is this going to be an article or a YouTube video or what? Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense. Okay. And then I guess coming to the YouTube channel as well, there's lots of advice for people starting. Post every day for however long. Have a consistent schedule. Post at the same time. This, that to grow your channel. So I guess from your experience, is any of this true?
That's okay. Totally crap.
And then well, what do you do instead?
So I asked my friend Nick, who is also a YouTuber with 50, 60,000 subscribers. I asked this like a year ago. I was like, Nick, you haven't posted in 2 months, but you're like really established and you're really smart and you're a great guy. Like, what gives, bro? Like, what is with the consistency argument? Do you feel like that's a load of crap, or is that actually important for like creators, new creators? And here's what he said. He thinks be consistent in your content is really good advice, but not because of the algorithms. Instead, I think this is really good advice, and we all like to give this advice of be consistent so that creators can develop a practice, right? This is like Seth Godin territory, like a practice, a schedule, a routine of content creation. It's nice every now and then to feel that pressure of, oh, I got to release something tomorrow because I said I would. I publish every Saturday at 10 a.m. It's Thursday. I don't have a video for this week. I should probably create something. That's actually a good feeling. Most people would argue that, but I actually think that's strong. It teaches you how to create on a schedule, create better and faster and be more efficient, create systems. It helps you with all those things. But in terms of algorithm, like getting your videos seen more because you publish every Saturday at 10 a.m., I don't buy into it at all. And the reason I don't is because I've done it across multiple YouTube channels. Like, I break those rules all the time, and I see absolutely no side effect whatsoever. And I see absolutely no benefit when I am really strict about my publishing schedule. Some people might experience things completely differently, and that's okay. But for me, I don't think it's important.
Gotcha. And then you obviously mentioned the algorithm there too. So obviously, I think you mentioned it earlier in your chat before about click-through rates and watch time being important for, I guess, YouTube promoting your channel. So are there things that you do within your videos to help promote click-through rates, watch time, people staying on your channel and watching multiple videos?
Yeah. A few things. Number one, nothing you can do about click-through rates except for title and thumbnail. And I personally believe these to be true for the most time. This is the advice everybody will give, but I hired Tim Schmoyer's team at Video Creators. Actually, he just sold his company last week. I was just talking to him with at FinCon. Anyway, I hired his team like a year ago to do like a channel audit. They watched a couple of my videos and we had like a Zoom call and yada, yada. And here's what I took away from that call. Title, thumbnail, hook. The three components for like all of those metrics that we just mentioned. Thumbnail being pretty obvious, right? The image. It needs to tell a story, quote unquote. That's what the video creators team told me. Like, tell a story. And that didn't make any sense when they started telling me about it. But then they pulled up a bunch of thumbnails and showed them to me. And they asked me, like, this is one of Mr. Beast's like most popular videos. What story is it telling? And I would look at it and be like, well, actually, it's like showing that he's like terrified of a shark or something like that. And they're like, terrified. You just mentioned like an emotion right there. And they're like, well, what about this other thumbnail? What's the story it's telling? And I'd be like, well, actually, that guy looks like really depressed because of, and they're like, ah, depressed. You're mentioning an emotion. And I kind of took that away. Like, you can do a review on a product, but Is it a positive review? Is it a negative review? Is it a curious review? Like, what is the emotion tied to this? Like, you need to showcase that first and foremost. And when you look at all the really great thumbnails, they all tend to have something like that, like an emotion shown somewhere or something, right? Or at least some sort of like story, quote unquote. I hate that word, but it kind of made sense when they were talking about it.
Yeah.
And titles are generally, you know, the more clickbaity, the better, sort of. But on the other hand, for a niche site or a niche YouTube channel that's on a very specific topic or a specific product or whatever it is, I have completely abandoned the whole like clickbait title idea and just gone with keywords like super clear, right? Like I'm holding up a tripod in my hand right now for those who can't see me. The Joby S1 review, or something really simple, very basic, very clear. If you're in a niche where there's like a bajillion channels that talk about the Joby tripod or whatever, that's probably never going to work. You're going to have to be a little bit more creative. It's going to be harder. But for my niche, for my topic, it is far less creative. So all I'm really doing is making daggum sure that both Google, YouTube, and the user knows what my video is. Again, clarity. That's like the number one thing. And then number three, the hook. Title, thumbnail, and then the hook, meaning like the first 10 seconds of the video, like we mentioned a second ago. When you're a new YouTuber, especially, you just gotta like say what the video is and get into it as fast as humanly possible. Like literally the shorter the better. If you can do a 2.5 second intro, it generally works better. There's more user retention. There's more watch time for this video. I wish it wasn't the case because I want to be witty and clever and funny and like showcase my cinematic skills with my fancy camera, but none of that crap really matters in my own personal experience. And so it's just the hook. What are you going to learn in this video? Here it is. Here's what that is. So there's probably way more that the fancy YouTubers would tell you. But for me personally, both for this YouTube channel and the Do You Even Blog YouTube channel, which I don't focus on as much the past like year or so, but those are like the only things I really think about. Title, thumbnail, the first 10 to 15 seconds of the video.
Gotcha. Most important parts. And then I guess there's also an SEO component to YouTube. Obviously, you've got tools, TubeBuddy, vidIQ, I think are the two main ones that people often use to, I guess, have the keywords in the right place and things. But how important is the description for being able to rank your video? Is there anything that you need to do in there?
No, not at all.
Nothing?
So I use a tool called Morning Fame, which I actually really recommend. They've done a fantastic job with this tool. I think they have a plan that's like $4 a month. I think I pay like $10 or $12 a month. Anyways, it's far superior to TubeBuddy and vidIQ and like all these tools. Far superior, like heads and shoulders above those tools.
What does it do different?
Well, first of all, it's a standalone like platform, kind of like an Ahrefs or an SEMrush or whatever, just for YouTube. And it shows you all of the data. There's tabs for analytics. There's tabs for keyword research. Their keyword research tool is really straightforward, easy to use, gives you lots of suggestions, shows you the videos that are ranking. It's fleshed out. Like, it's really fantastic. So I use that. Per that tool and their founder, Nikolai, I can't remember his name at the moment. Doesn't matter. You can go look him up. He's pretty much come to the conclusion, and I trust him, that description is, and it doesn't matter for ranking higher in search results. This doesn't matter whatsoever. I found that to be true. I've tried both ways. Okay. I've tried descriptive stuff. I've tried keyword stuffing. I've tried using jump links, not using jump links, like where you click and it goes to the spot in the video or whatever. Chapter marks or whatever it's called. Tags, same thing. Like, tags don't matter. They don't. At least in my opinion. And the opinion of the Morning Fame guys. I think it's all about, for SEO at least, I think it's all about the title. Like, just making that in the title, period. And the rest of it is, you know, click-through rate. Like we said, those three things from earlier. The hook, click-through, title, thumbnail, the hook.
Yeah.
Trying to think about anything else. I think that's it.
I guess because YouTube and Google are getting better now at actually pulling out what's in the actual video, correct, in terms of what's being said, and then using that as kind of like, you know, what you're talking about is what the topic of the video is.
Yeah. I don't know. I hear this all the time. I remember hearing this at, I was a podcast movement a couple of years ago. They weren't talking about YouTube. They were talking about podcasting and how Google has started automatically transcribing every podcast on Google Podcasts. This is when Google Podcasts was like new a couple of years ago. And I'm sure it's true. I'm sure they're reading the transcripts and trying to figure out what the video is about in some way, but I don't know. I just haven't seen any data to like really back up exactly what they're doing or how it's working. I don't know. I haven't done any experiments on my own channels, so I just kind of ignore it.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. And then I guess you mentioned you can make, you're the fastest content publisher or the fastest content creator on this podcast that's been on this podcast ever and potentially in the whole space. So I want to know your processes then. So maybe how do you create and edit video so quickly? Sorry, that's my dog scratching the door there. How do you create the YouTube videos so quickly and edit them and publish them? And then same thing with the blog posts, because obviously at some point you've got to sit down and write the blog post, and writing the blog post can take time. So then how do you manage to research and write that in record time as well?
Yeah. That's a long answer to this question. So this is actually what Do You Even Blog has pivoted to in terms of topic since burning out for the past year or whatever. I spend most of my time, whenever I do anything on Do You Even Blog, talking about this idea of producing faster. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of things. I'm just going to riff on a couple of ideas that came to my head.
Yeah, so go.
Actually, first of all, I'm going to cop out. I don't know if this is allowed, but I have a course. It's 100% free. When the pandemic happened, I just made it free. It's called Crush Your Content, and it's all about content, productivity, efficiency, hints, hacks, like just everything. Like, it's all there. It's 100% free. I can send you a link later.
Yep.
So that was a cop out. So a few things. Let's talk about YouTube first. So off air, you saw my camera and you're like, oh, you got like a podcasting studio. And the truth is, it's not the fanciest thing ever, but it is true. I can hit record in 5 seconds and be recording good YouTube video. The camera you're seeing right now is my cheap, crappy webcam. But over here, hooked up, ready to go on a tripod. Are you showing this on YouTube, by the way, or is this audio only?
Yep, this will be on YouTube too.
Oh, okay, good. Well, you see it right there. Fancy pants camera that I spent way too much money on. Fancy pants light, fancy pants microphones. Not the one I'm talking into right now, but a nice shotgun mic. I dim the lights. I got my controllers right here on my desk where I can dim lights, change colors for this and that. And I pull up Ecamm Live, which is what I use to record video most of the time. I got my keybinds for different like scenes, if you will, like share my desktop screen or like camera only or whatever, just ready to go. Like, I could literally hang up this call with James right now and I could be recording a YouTube video about 15 seconds later. I'll maybe take a little bit longer. I'd probably move some things, but that's it. It's just ready to go at a moment's notice. It's recorded straight to my computer, so I don't have to get out the SD card. It's,
oh, wow. Okay.
Just everything. It's little stuff like that. I've spent my entire life absolutely obsessing over time optimization. I tie my shoelaces different to save time. It's the stupidest thing ever. Do I recommend other people do this? No, I do not. But I do it.
You just need Velcro shoes or slip-on shoes, and you don't even need to tie your shoes even faster.
I usually go that route anyways. But when I do have to tie shoes, I also order on Amazon the like the military combat boot laces that just have like a zip thing. You never tie them. You just like move the zip thing. I paid like $15 for them on Amazon because I was tired of tying my laces from my boots like in the snow. I moved to Michigan about 2 years ago and I have boots now for the first time ever, so I bought those. Like, just a little time-saving thing. I obsess over this stuff in my own life and business to the extent that I don't recommend everybody else do it, but that was just an example for YouTube.
Yeah.
For blogging, how about this? So I do a lot of copying and pasting from my own content, not like stealing everybody else's content on the internet, but I have a good memory. And in fact, I even have like an article database that helps me keep a good memory of stuff I've already written. And for every blog post I do, I will like rinse and reuse stuff I've already written. Sometimes as much as like 60% of the content. Like if it's like 2,000 words, 1,000 plus might be stuff I've already written. And I'm just literally copying and pasting and tweaking a few things or whatever. I have my content templates ready to go. They're on Shortcuts. I spend a lot of time creating them up front so that if I need to do a roundup review, a single product review, a Q&A post, question and answer, or like whatever it is, I have my own custom content templates that are built for me. Some nobody else made them. I made them for my own content for this specific brand, ready to go. And it's a, I just like launch it and then I do it. I have templates for this. I have templates for that. I have templates for SEO outlining and research. I have Workflowy. That's a software. People can go look it up. I got my templates there. Every time I need to research a new article, I like whip out a new one, copy and paste. And I like have a little checklist that I do for SEO research that took me time to develop, but now I just like follow it. Boom, 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 boom. And it's the same thing with publishing and editing. All my featured images are from the same Canva template. That's literally just open up that Canva template and then duplicate the last one and then change some things and then like do it again. Everything is automated and optimized. I'm a bit of a freak when it comes to this. So I don't know if that was helpful for anybody. It's definitely my
superpower. Sounds very efficient though. Yeah, it sounds very efficient.
Yeah.
So what about the editing process of the YouTube video then? Because that's something that I guess it takes a shit ton of time depending on what you're trying to do in the videos. I'm assuming you keep your videos very simple because of that reason for time.
Yes and no. Obviously, I tell myself I'm going to keep the videos super simple so it takes less time editing. But I also just really enjoy editing video specifically. I really do, and I always have. Even before starting a YouTube channel, like I edited video in middle school and high school for like various projects, and I just loved it. I have so much fun with it. But even then, so I use Final Cut Pro on my Mac now, even though I've tried Premiere Pro, I've tried DaVinci Resolve, I've tried a number of things. I've tried editing on my iPad to see if that was faster. I've tried all the softwares. I'm sticking with Final Cut Pro. I've built my own templates for like title things, and I don't do transitions, but my audio effects, I built a template for that too. I just drag it on and I'm done. I've already have it tuned to that shotgun mic over there. Like I've done all that work beforehand. I did one thing that video editors rarely do, which is actually changed the keybinds. Like, so it's all on my left hand now. Like there were keybinds all over the keyboard for like various edits and cuts and all this sort of stuff. I went in and I changed the keybinds. So they're all under my left hand now. So I never have to like move my hand off the mouse. And I don't know. Other than that, it's just repetition, right? Like I've edited 1,000 videos easily. So.
Damn. That's to the extreme of efficiency then. That's,
I know.
I mean, it's ultimate time saving there, isn't it? That you're able to get multiple pieces of content out each week.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. That all sounds really nice, right? And people listen to this and be like, oh, I wish I could do that. Well, you can't, right? This is my superpower. And so my question to everybody, as somebody who teaches this stuff, or at least used to, with two years blog, is what is your superpower? I have a friend who can read scripts, prompts for a YouTube video, and it's really convincing. I tried that a couple of times because I actually thought it might be faster. No, it looked terrible. That was definitely not a superpower. Speaking off the cuff was much more of a superpower for me. I have a friend who just writes like 40,000 words a week. Freelance writer, her own blog. I think she's even written like a book or two at this point. She just wakes up in the morning and writes 3,000 words. And I'm like, that just seems insane. Like from a blank page too. Like no templates, no research. She could just pump out content in words and have it be like really good. That's her thing. Some people are really good interviewers. Some people aren't. Some people are really good writers. Some people aren't. Some people are really good at formatting. I'm thinking about the Authority Hacker guys at the moment.
Yeah.
I really love their formatting. or even if you don't love it, like you could tell they're good at it and they thought about it intentionally. And some people don't have that. They should focus on different types of content. Whereas the authority hacker people can focus on these types of content. And these people can focus on YouTube, but these people can focus on whatever, right? And so my ridiculous time-saving and optimization obsession, for lack of a better word, that's my superpower. And I have other things that I suck at, right? Like, I'm good at that, but I suck at other things. That's okay. And so I just really want to, like, underscore this. Just how important it is to kind of discover what are some of those superpowers that you have, person listening to this, like, podcast, and try and, like, really capitalize on that.
Yeah.
People get that when I say it, but they don't actually spend the time to figure it out, right? Like, they might have a vague idea, and they're like, oh, okay, that sounds like a smart thing to do, and then they never do anything about it. So, there's my rant. Rant over.
That's awesome advice for anyone listening. But I also wanted to come on to your, I guess, your blogging area too, from your Do You Even Blog podcast. Is there anything that you've taken from the people that you've talked to, interviewed, associated with within Do You Even Blog, that you've brought over into your own practice of blogging or YouTube? Pieces of advice, things people do, anything like that?
Oh, absolutely. Almost everything.
Almost everything.
So I tell people this who want to start a podcast, start a podcast because it's fun and not because you'll make money. And maybe you will. That's fine. If you need to make money, maybe you will. But there's another benefit to podcasting, and that is it's free consulting. I had Seth Godin on my podcast for an hour, and I got to ask him whatever I want. Like, how much would it be if you went to Seth Godin? Like, hey, how much? And I need to hire you just to ask questions for an hour. He'd be like, first of all, no. Second of all, if he said yes, it would be like, I don't even know how much money. But start a podcast, and you get to do it for free. And so...
yeah.
I don't do a lot of interviews anymore, again, because I kind of put down Do You Even Blog. But if you look at all the people I've interviewed in the past year, I mean, just a handful of interviews. I've only done like 4 or 5 in the past year. They're all niche site related. And there's a reason. It's because I wanted to learn some specific thing from some specific person. Does that make any sense? Mm-hmm. And so what have I taken away? Everything, right? Like, I don't have guests on just to have guests on. I have guests on because there's something really specific I want to ask them or talk to them about or take away to my other stuff.
Yeah, I do the same thing on. So I host my own podcast for one of my sites. I do the same thing. Talk to people researching or the forefront of research within different areas that I want to learn about. People that have done their PhDs in certain areas. People who are coaching various world champion athletes and what they're doing, and then being able to network with them as well and get to know them in person, because obviously it's a different emailing or Facebook messaging versus being on a call face to face on a call at least. And then that can lead to being able to meet them in person too, and then that obviously cements the relationship further there as well, and you've got like almost like a little community of people within your space as well that you can kind of go back and forth with.
Totally. And also, there's no rules with podcasting. You could have the same guests on again if they want to come on.
Yeah, exactly.
I think I've had Brendan Hufford on my show like 4 times. Just because we're friends, and I think he's a smart guy, and I like to learn SEO from Brendan. So,
You can always, you don't have to keep it on the exact topic all the time. You can just shoot the shit and just talk, and things come through, and guests usually like that conversational kind of podcast anyway as well. Just I guess it's just easier. You don't have to sit there and plan these specific questions where it almost sounds like the whole thing's scripted, where things kind of flow and listeners enjoy that too.
I'm with you.
Nice. Well, I think I've pretty much asked you everything I wanted to ask you there, and we got a really good deep dive into kind of how you're doing things and with YouTube and podcasting and niche sites. But is there any way people can follow you with what you're doing, whether that's social media, or you probably don't want to share your site or anything like that, so maybe just keep that to socials.
I would say doyouevenblog.com.
Okay.
I don't like listing out like, oh, you can find me on Twitter at, find me on TikTok at, find me on LinkedIn at, or like, download this freebie or download this freebie or download this freebie. I would say go to doyouevenblog.com. So everything's right there on the homepage. I would say, I changed my mind. I come full circle in this. Join my newsletter. So I used to do more launching and sales, but I've actually, much to the delight of my subscribers, I've actually transitioned, again, to save time and energy, into just like a roundup email. Like I find cool stuff on the internet, and I occasionally produce my own content, and I would just share it like a couple times a month. It's like the same format. It's like, here's this thought, this and this and this. So yeah, I'll point people there. And again, it's at davidblog.com, right there on the homepage, probably towards the bottom, et cetera, et cetera. But thank you for asking.
Perfect. Perfect. No problem. And actually, I wanted to ask you about the whole launch. I remember you did a podcast. It must have been a year or two ago. The evergreen versus launch, I guess, models for your digital products. And I don't know, did you end up picking, I guess, a model for your site? Obviously, you mentioned launches now. So is that kind of what you're doing, launch and close? Or are you looking to just keep it evergreen for your products?
Depends on the product. And quite frankly, I'm probably the worst person to ask about this. I haven't been able to find an answer to any of my own products personally. I think the general advice, well, there's pros and cons to all of those things.
Yeah.
In 2020, I was almost exclusively focused on evergreen, automated, like deadline funnels, right?
Yeah.
Through Facebook ads and Google ads or whatever. And they worked really well for a long time. And then I took a vacation in the summer of, or like really early 2021, actually. And Facebook ad costs were starting to rise, the iOS changes or whatever. And well, I shut them all down. And since then, I've actually been going back to this idea of on-demand launches. And what I mean by this is, what if you had a launch, meaning like maybe some social shares, some pre-sales emails, some launch week emails, some yada yada, like fill in the blank. What if you had like all of those assets, if you want to call it that, ready to go at a moment's notice for whenever you needed it? Through an automation, by the way. Like, so build out a launch fully automated, but don't actually like have it evergreen, just have it like sitting there. So, and I've done this a couple of times, and I actually had some students do this too. They built out like 2 emails for a pre-launch, and then like 4, 5, or 7 emails for like a launch, and they had like a deadline funnel just like ready to go, like attached to it, and then they had the sales page, and they had the ThriveCart product or SamCart product or whatever. They all had stuff like ready to go, so that they're like, actually, I have emergency surgery scheduled tomorrow. I'm not going to be around for 2 weeks or 2 months for that matter. I need to make money. Well, select all my like 8,000 email subscribers. I throw them in this automation, and then there's a launch. So it's kind of like a live launch, but it's already done, right? Like I don't have to actually spend a whole lot of time and energy. It's kind of like an on-demand one-click launch. I actually have a YouTube video where I show one of my like one-click launches. That's actually what I do now. For new products and old products alike, like I build everything, an entire live launch pretty much in an automation. And then I have like a Google Drive with like some tweets and stuff like that ready to go, so that actually I can like, you know, do a couple of hours of work, making sure everything's fine and scheduling it and whatever. And then I don't have to worry about it again. So it's like a weird, strange hybrid model. But again, don't ask me, man. My launches have been failing the past year. I'll just be honest. So there's that.
Yeah. No, it's still good insight just to kind of see how people are kind of looking to promote their digital products and what they're doing as well. So it's always good to hear different perspectives regardless. Yeah, perfect. Well, thanks for coming on, Pete. I really appreciate it. For everyone listening, obviously, you can check out Pete's website, doevenblog.com. There should be links down in the description there. And other than that, thank you.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode, goodbye.